If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the automatic doors. They will be closing in a moment. Thank you.
Welcome to another episode of the Monorail Tales. With me tonight, hosting this show, is the one and only Steve Sanders.
Hello, because everybody thinks I'm English, just not Sheila.
Okay, Steve, I have a question for you.
All right.
Okay, now you're not going to do that all the show, are you?
Oh, it's great. I love it.
Probably not.
Okay.
I've learned from Dick Van Dyke. How to talk like this.
Okay, Steve, I do have a real question for you.
Okay.
What do you think would be better than having a previous guest like Timmy Britt, who is an author, artist, worked at Disney as an Imagineer, for our show tonight?
Oh, my gosh. Bob's your uncle. We could have him back.
Wow. By Jove, what a great idea.
That's what I thought.
Because, yes, we do have the one and only Timmy Britt and the lovely Catherine Bell back on our show. Yay! Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This was a great introduction. You guys are the best. You're real pros.
So anyway,
go ahead.
To our listeners, that's the sound you're going to hear quite a lot of tonight, okay? Just to give you a heads up. Actually, to our listeners, to the show, we've had a lot of new listeners since Timmy was last on the show. So, you know, go back, listen to the first interview that he did with us, and that's episode 189, where you will hear Catherine and Timmy talk about his book and many, many other great stories. So once again, I'm turning now to you, Timmy. Just once again, welcome back to the show, and the same to you, Catherine.
Thank you so much. So since we spoke last, we had a chance to go back to Disney World for the 50th anniversary.
Well, before you start sharing that story.
Yeah.
On our first episode that we did, I want to take our listeners back very briefly to the five-year-old standing on Main Street on his birthday. If you could just give us a quick snapshot and then jump 50 years later.
Okay, so picture this. Now, I will never forget this. I'm 55 years old now. When I was 5 years old, this happened, and it happened yesterday. It was so amazing. I was sound asleep in the back of my parents' car after a long 2-day drive from Philadelphia, and I woke up, and all I remember was this gigantic, I mean, the biggest parking lot you can imagine. And I get out of the car, and I didn't know where we were. And my mom says, "Well, happy birthday." I said, "Well, where are we?" And my dad said, "We're in Walt Disney World." Now, it was the opening day in 1971, and it was on my birthday. So it was a really special, magical day. But when you're only 5 years old, everything seems so big. So we go on the monorail, and we get to the park, and I can't believe how many people are there. Tickets were like $2.50, too. It was ridiculous. So we get in there, and there's so many people that it's me, my mom, my dad, and my little brother. He was only 3. So we get in, and I can't take my eyes off the castle, first of all. But we can't get to it. There's so many people. But I can see it, you know, because my dad picks me up, puts me on his shoulders, which I don't think they let you do that now, but I was allowed then. And I just couldn't get over the magnificence of it all. Like, the ambiance was so amazing. The colors, the sounds, the people, It was just so amazing. But before we got to go enjoy anything, the crowd got really quiet. And I didn't know what was going on. And it's my birthday, and I'm a little kid, and I'm so excited. And all of a sudden, we see the crowd, and the cast members are ushering people away from a certain section. And there it is, this podium. And then this little old man walks up, and behind him, I'll never forget it as long as I live, is the coolest mouse I ever saw. Mickey Mouse comes up behind Roy Disney, and he gets behind the mic, and he tells the world that he's going to name the park after his brother, who had passed away 5 years earlier. That, you know, the year I was born, Walt died. So I never got to meet Walt. However, when he's describing how much it meant, how many people put their effort into it, it really meant a lot. Like, I could see a tear in my dad's eye and my mom. And I was a little kid thinking this was all for me. Well, then, oh my God, then when he announced that it was for Walt, oh, the balloons went up and the fanfare and the music. And then we were able to go play in the park. And I will never forget riding on the Haunted Mansion. You know, I'm 5 years old and I'm looking in the buggy and there's a ghost going home with us. Like, that stuff was really cool to me. I still, for years, couldn't figure out how they did all that stuff. Having the ghosts fly around in the one ballroom, how they had things popping up and popping down, and how the chair would move. Like, as a five-year-old, I couldn't imagine it. Then, of course, we did the teacups and Dumbo and Winnie the Pooh and Peter Pan. Oh, it was just amazing. It was the most magical thing that ever happened. So I left there with a real sense of belonging. Like, I felt like, well, this is a place where, you know, this is the happiest place that I, you know, you could imagine. And it was all brand new and everything was shiny. The paint, some of the paint was still wet, I believe. You know, I think they just finished it to let us in. So it was really, really an amazing moment in my life. And it changed everything. It influenced me and it led me to really want to be a part of that magic somehow. That's where the book comes in. Walt, I believe that Walt made a wish on my birthday, October 25th, because there's no way what happened to me for the rest of my life could have happened without some sort of magic. Because for the park to be opened on my birthday, well, 5 years earlier than that, the night I was born, and I was born about 11:11 at night, 11:11 p.m. is when I was born. And that's right about when the fireworks would have ended in Disneyland. And October 25th, towards the end of October, Walt was gone a month later. So he was sick and he was feeling it. And he knew his time was coming to an end. Doctors had found, you know, amazing amounts of cancer and things like that in him. And I think he died of surgery. He died in the surgery when they were trying to save his life, a heart attack. But I really believe that his last night in Disneyland, he got to watch the fireworks and he made a wish that someone would take on his dream and keep an eye on it and make sure it would work. Well, a month after my birthday when I was five, Roy Disney left after that day and never made it back to Walt Disney World. He then died in California just a month later, just like Walt. He died in December as well. Yeah. So with both Disney brothers gone and me as a five-year-old boy, Mickey didn't have much of a chance, did he? But I didn't let that stop me. I was so in love with the place. So that's my brief experience as a five-year-old boy of going to the park and how magical it was. And why it was so important, because it shows that Walt made a wish. And he made a wish on the dying embers of the last fireworks the instant that I was born. I know it had to be that way, because what happened next is amazing. And, you know, if you read the book, you'll see. I'm just an ordinary, everyday guy, but with God watching over me as the extra part and Walt being there for the magic. That's why the book is called Extraordinary Everyday Magic, because I can't explain it any other way. I got very lucky, first of all. I am a talented guy, I admit that, but no more talented than anyone else. And I'm not smarter than anyone else. I'm not more charming than anyone else. I just got really lucky. There's a lot of magic involved in believing in something and then working really hard to get there. So as a five-year-old boy, I was there and I saw Roy dedicate the park to his brother in that last beautiful moment of love and magic for the whole world to enjoy, which is still enjoying it today. So that's my five-year-old boy story.
Okay, Timmy, I can't thank you enough for once again sharing. I've read that in the book. I heard it on the first episode you did with us. And
it never gets old.
It never gets old. It still gives me goosebumps. Yep. It's just heartwarming. And I just wanted all of our listeners, if they hadn't heard it before, to hear that. If nothing else, they had to hear that story. Now, we are going to jump to 50 years later. But once you've told what happened last October, you know, your views, your thoughts of being back on that street 50 years later, what I would like to do is then just go back and fill in what happened over the 50 years and where you are today and all the things that's happened since we last talked. So Absolutely. Let's just jump 50 years.
So we're going to flash forward now 50 years. And I have my incredible writer here, Catherine Bell, who's a dear friend. Magic has never had a better friend than Roy Disney and Catherine Bell. She has been so phenomenal in my life. And we wouldn't have this book if it wasn't for her. She's an amazing writer. So we've become great friends. And we would fight. Trust me, when we made this book, there was chapters where we're screaming at each other. It was really ridiculous.
There was blood.
Yeah, there was blood. So, but we suffered through it and we got through it. And then the good things happened. She would sit and read me a chapter that she did. And once we got past the final, like, I don't really talk like that, or I don't really feel that way. Once we got through that, and she tried to explain to me, well, the writing style is this. And I'd say, yeah, but I don't talk that way. So we worked all that out. And then she would read me a chapter and nobody else in the world had heard it yet, except for her, but she never read it out loud. She would read it out loud to me and she would be like, well, what do you think? And she'd look over and I'd be sitting there crying my eyes out, or I'd be just weeping with joy. I couldn't believe the way that she laid out the story. It was so really magical for someone like me who's been surrounded by magic, spent my whole life with magic, all the Disney, to have her then read it back to me. I still to this day call her the narrator because she's just got a beautiful voice. And she read it with great inflection, and it was just so heartwarming to have her read the chapter to me and me be able to hear it. And then I knew, like, by the time she read the third chapter, I said, you know, this is going to be a big hit. And since then, we've only had the book out for 6 months. We have 25 five-star reviews on Amazon. It's amazing. I don't even know how to thank all these people. What a great gift back to me to write the things that these people have written on Amazon. I am really, really touched and flattered, and really, I don't even feel great. I'm super grateful, but I don't even feel like I deserve it. You know, I just did what I felt like I needed to do. But to have the rest of the world respond and see the hardships I went through, the troubles I went through, they were right there with me page by page. And then they wrote all of these great reviews. So I just want to say thank you to anybody listening that had written a review. I know there's only 25 people out there, but maybe there'll be more. But Catherine really put her foot in this one, man. It is amazing. And I'm really grateful to have her as a friend. Let's flash forward 50 years, though, now and get you to
Can I just make one quick comment about the book? I made it on the last show. I think it's really worth saying again, Timmy. So I don't mean to interrupt. But, yeah, I do mean to interrupt. Get used to it. The book is so easy to read. It's amazing print. You don't have to squint your eyes to read little tiny print. It's very well done. I think you should mention about the drawings in the book before you go further, Timmy.
Oh.
But the other thing that I do want to say about this is I started reading this book and it just felt like Timmy Britt was in my living room. Aww. So for someone to write a book where the person comes off the page and it feels like you're there on Main Street with them, I think that says a lot for the writer.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's as good as any of the five-star reviews that we have. Thank you so much. That's such a beautiful thing to say. She did. She really wrote it as if, like, that's where we fought. I kept saying, but I'm not really like that. I'm just a street rat from Philly, really. I'm not this, you know. She had it all elaborate. And I
had to keep it family friendly.
And she had to keep it family friendly. Yeah. But then she wrote it down, and I wasn't going to illustrate the book. That was against, I said, no, I want people to read the story. Don't want them to get wrapped up in the artwork. And she said, look, wouldn't this be a great place to put this? And go ahead and tell them, Catherine, about the...
Well, every time I told anyone about the book, the first question I would get was, is he going to illustrate it? And I said, yeah, he's going to illustrate it. He's an artist. He was a Walt Disney World animation artist. And later he was a scenic artist as a Walt Disney World Imagineer. Of course he's going to illustrate it. And he would say, no, the story stands on its own. And so I went through his art and I found two or three pictures which I thought would fit some of the chapters, and I put them in there. I said, look, doesn't this look good like this? And everybody wants illustrations. So finally, it's fine. Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, then I sit down and draw 48 more pictures.
He did.
Though.
Well, yeah, I think we use about 6 or 7 of the ones you already had.
But they fit into the story.
But there's 50 illustrations. There's one for every chapter, and it just really captures the spirit of the book. And when it came out, I showed it to him, and he said, "Yeah, you're right. It really needed the pictures."
Yeah, I had to learn that lesson the hard way.
I was right.
Yeah. Never going to hear that again on radio or in print or anywhere else. Yeah, I was wrong, and she was right. She also designed the cover and the back. I had nothing to do with that. Right. She took a picture of Walt Disney, and we took his silhouette, because the first part of the prologue is Walt looking up at the fireworks in a secret corner on Main Street in Disneyland. While the guests are watching, Walt would sneak down from his little apartment and just see the finale, the last show of the night. And on this one night in October, around 11:11, when the show was over, there were still embers coming down from the show ending at 11. And poof, that's where she thought of this idea for the cover. And on the back, she just took my helmet, my statue of Walt that I have. I have a bust that's carved by one of the artists from Disney World. And just all little things about my nameplate from Imagineering and my stamper from animation. And so she really deserves a lot of credit for this. I mean, it's my story, but she really made it her own. So now we're parents. This book is now our baby. And and so, we're real proud of it. But that's the story behind the illustrations. There was going to be no illustrations, but
There were always going to be illustrations.
So let's go 50 years ahead now. Catherine is so excited now because she gets to go share this moment with me, because who else would I take? You know, the girl sat there with me page by page. It's almost a 400 and, I mean, you get your money's worth. It's a 500 page book. So I said, well, let's go then. And then we went. And I got to tell you, it was really cool knowing everything I know and what I've done and what I've accomplished and all the things I did there. And I know how the stuff is done. Like, now I know the mysteries of the Haunted Mansion, and I know how the parades are run. I know about the tunnels. I painted Main Street. I painted the part of Agrabah where, the jasmine and the magic carpets are. I painted the new castle extensions that they put on. I was a part of all that. So I understand what's going on. But somehow on that day, the first thing I did was I walked in, and over by this little nondescript bush is this plaque. It's the same plaque that Roy presented to the world that day that said, here on this day, October 25th, 1971, we're going to dedicate this park in my brother's honor for all the world to come enjoy. So the first thing I did was I went over and I laid my book next to that. And I took a picture of the book and I took a picture of the plaque, and something happened. I just transformed back into a 5-year-old boy, because I turned around. I'm like, Mom, Dad, like I thought my parents were still there. It was amazing. And so Disney made it now like a whole month or a whole year of the 50th anniversary. But we went on the exact day, the exact time. And as it turns out, I believe it was a Tuesday, which was the same day, I believe, that my birthday was. It was a Monday. Yeah. So I think somewhere along the week, it was like everything was right. But we went in and we rode the monorail. You know, I'm so glad you guys are called Monorail Tales, by the way. So we rode the monorail and we got to do all that great stuff. But I remember the fireworks that night. And I just kept thinking to myself, maybe this is a chance for me to make a wish that someone else will go ahead, and continue the magic for other people for generations to come. And so in tradition with what I believe Walt must have done, I'm having a hard time saying this because it's so personal to me, but I sat there and I made a wish that somewhere out there, there's going to be somebody who's going to come as a little kid and see it and realize that they need to continue the tradition of the magic that goes on for years and stories and generations to come. And so to come full circle like that, it's really hard for me not to get choked up while I talk about this, but
he got choked up a lot that day.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was so different and so similar. I don't know how to describe that sensation. Like, here I am on Main Street USA again, 50 years later, but I know so much, and yet the magic overwhelms you. It takes you in. If you want to believe in it, it's right there for you. And for me, of course, I believe. So I was all in, you know. So I will say the one difference was the prices of everything. Oh my God. I got a hot dog for 25 cents back in 1971, and I paid $10.50 for one. Oh, wow. 50 years later, it was ridiculous. Water was $5 a bottle. Now, I have to defend Disney and say they were closed for over a year with the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so for them to recoup is quite difficult for any company to do, especially a company as large as that. And with all the problems in California, Disneyland is having a hard time finding employees because they can't find anywhere to live. The prices of real estate in California, the taxes, everything is going crazy. So Disney had some deals with California, the state actually, and the state of California had broken those deals. So Disney said, okay, we're out. And now they're moving the Imagineering team from California to Florida again. But there's not much of an Imagineering team left. They're not going to build. The price of gas, the price of wood, the price of cement, the price of iron, it's all tripled. So Disney is now just on a, let's open up the gates, let's let people in, let's fill up the coffers a little bit, and then we'll go on and continue to build. So what that means is that all the artists that I've worked with over the years and that I've groomed and trained and helped and opened doors for are now kind of scrambling for things to do. And I have some friends, if you don't mind, I know they're listening. I'd love to mention their sure. names. They'll get a big thrill out of it. But Robin Galindo and Meg Billy are two amazing Disney artists that are scenic artists as well. They also have other roles in Disney World as far as photography and entertainment. But once they got a chance with me to work, they helped me build Hagrid's Motorbike Adventure exactly over in Universal Studios, truth be told. And then with all their training, they went over and they put all the finishing touches on Star Wars and a couple other things. They helped me do the entrances and the exits to Epcot and the Magic Kingdom to get ready for the 50th anniversary. You know, we did that a year and a half in advance so that
right.
we could bring the colors back to the same colors that Walt had imagined. You know, he wasn't there when Disney World was being built, but he did have a model and he did have ideas and he did talk about it. And the colors he picked were very nondescript. They were very drab, kind of really, like just a gray and a little lilac. Really simple, but when you put it all together, it just had this welcoming look to it, and so it was a real honor to work with them. Well, Robin and Megan started their own little company called The Painted Tusk, and now they're running all around Florida doing these amazing murals. The last one they did was this giant thing for the Give Kids the World, so they're out there doing really good things, and I'm so proud of them, because I knew if somebody gave them a chance, they could do it. And then this other company called Home Theme Orlando is hiring all the other artists to go around. Like if you go to Walt Disney World, you can stay on property. And I suggest it. It's a great, you know, you'll have a great time. But if you can't afford that, right outside Disney World are all these vacation homes. And those homes are beautiful. 6-bedroom, 4-bathroom, giant swimming pool. They're nice. But what my friend Frank does is, my friend Mark does, he goes around and he hires artists that I call and say, look, grab this person, grab that person. This person's good at this. This person's good at that. And he'll theme out the basement like it's a playroom, but it's a sunken ship. And the girls' bedrooms are princesses' turrets or outer space or the jungle. Like they're making these themed homes. So if you can stay in one themed home that doesn't have any, that's all themed, and one home that has no theming, you're going to want to stay in the one that has all the fun stuff. So when you leave the magic of the park, you go home at night to another magical place. So I'd like to just mention how great they're doing. And then an upcoming artist that is really kicking butt. I mean, this girl, and she's from England, Sheila.
Yay!
Her name is Charlotte_Downing_art, Charlotte Downing Art. And of all the artists I've ever met, this one has that pure magic, like in every brushstroke. Like, so she takes the sweetest, most wonderful things about Disney from her, because she comes over with her family like every year and has been for, I don't know, the last 30 years. So she's got a love of Disney like you do, Sheila, and like you do, Steve, and like I do. And so I've watched her and we've remained friends, and she is painting stuff going out of her mind. Her goal is to get to Epcot for the next year's art festival.
Oh, cool.
So that's, I just wanted to mention some of my friends. There's Robin, Meg, Mark, and Charlotte. Just keep an eye out for them.
Yep.
Timmy, on the vacation homes, do you have a link for that? If not, we can add it after.
Yeah,
I can get it. It's just my phone's across the room.
Oh, yeah. No, we can do that later.
We can do it later.
It's Home Theme Orlando is the guy, and his name is Mark Younger. And he's taken on all these artists when they didn't have any work. That's why I want to promote them, because when they had nothing to do because they're not building at Disney or Universal, he was kind enough to take the artists that I sent them. and gave them a job, and they're going in and they're crushing it. Charlotte is painting canvases, and Meg and Robin have their own mural business where they'll go into like people that are residential. So Mark will handle the, you know, the vacation homes, where Robin and Meg will do businesses and residential and vacation homes too. But there's only the two of them, and they are crushing it. Everything that we learned, everything that, well, see, I'm older than them, so I got a chance to teach them. I took them, they were great artists in their own right, but then I got to take them and say, okay, so in scenic art, we want to do things this way, and we want to do things that way. Well, they picked it up like a duck picks up water, man. They just, I don't know, is that the right saying? Well, like a duck to water.
They took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah, that's why they're the writer. Okay. Anyway, and so look out for Charlotte's canvases, because we're going to try to get her into the Epcot's Festival of the Arts next year with her art. Robin and Meg might be there as well. And then Mark Younger's just going to keep making vacation homes for dreams. Imagine going to Disney World from another country, but you can't stay on property. It's sad enough, but some people can't, you know.
Yeah.
But when you get to stay in one of these vacation homes, and then you come home, your room is like the turret of a castle, or you're in outer space fighting aliens or whatever. It just keeps the magic going when you leave property. So I'd like to endorse these things for your listeners. So if they go to Florida, they have these other options, and people that are connected in some small way to Timmy Britt Studios or me and what I'm doing. Yeah. Now, I have some big developments about the future, though. And we can
I'm going to have to digress, because there's a few things I missed. Or that I, not that I missed, but that I want to talk to you about. And that's going back to when you were there 50 years later.
Yeah, sure.
And Catherine, you were there with him, right?
Yes.
All right. Tell me what you saw with Timmy.
Aww. Oh, well, I've always said Timmy is the world's oldest five-year-old, but it was especially true that day. He was just in Wonderland. It for him to be back on that day.
It was my birthday. So
it was his birthday.
So she said, go get lost for a little while and go wander on your own. Now, I knew something was up. It's my birthday.
Oh,
but guess what she did? Go ahead.
I took his copy of his book, and they weren't doing character meet and greets, because of COVID.
Right.
But the characters would get together at the entrance of the Magic Kingdom at the train station, and they would wave at everybody and everything.
From high above the second floor.
High above. And so I went back over to where they were coming up and down from the stage, and there was a cast member there, and I said, listen, do you want to help me make some magic? And I told her about the book, and I had this gold Sharpie pen. And when she heard what I needed, she just got this big smile on her face, and she tucked that book under her vest, and she said, I will be back. And I watched all the show, and I watched the characters come and go, and they all waved at me like they knew who I was. And when she came back, she had pulled aside all those characters that they had finished their show, and they had opened the book and signed Cinderella and Belle.
Every chapter, everything where I had a drawing, I had the fairy godmother, I had Ariel, I had Cinderella, I had Rapunzel. Oh, it was amazing. On my birthday, to have all the characters, Mickey, Donald, Goofy, Pluto, Minnie, they all signed it for me.
And it was really magical, because I couldn't get close to any of the characters. Nobody could.
No,
and this one cast member really worked some magic for me. And she told me they were all just really excited about it. And you know, they did the traditional signature with the flair and everything. It was just wonderful.
Gorgeous. What a great magical gift to come back knowing that no one else can get signatures from anybody. And here I have a book with all their signatures on the book that I wrote about Walt Disney World, Extraordinary Everyday Magic.
And so I told him, he came back later and said, so what have you been up to? And I said, I got you the best birthday present you're going to get today. And he said, he didn't have any idea what it could be. And I handed him the book, and he's like, okay, I've seen the book. I said, no, open it. And right on the front page, very front page, was Mickey Mouse's signature.
Yeah, your pal Mickey.
Oh, so my gosh. Then
we had two books. We only brought two books because we wanted to pack light.
Right.
And the one book they just signed, I have that book. The other book, I insisted. So I went down to, we were staying at the
Wilderness Lodge,
and which was amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
We went down to the concierge there, and I said, I need a favor. And I said, she said, what? I said, can I have a piece of paper and a pen? She goes, sure. And I sat there and I drew the perfect Mickey. And she goes, wow. She didn't know who I was. She goes, you're really good. I said, can I have another piece of paper? She goes, sure. And I drew a Winnie the Pooh. And I mean, they were just, I was really inspired. She said, what are they for? I said, they're for you, but I need a favor. She goes, oh my God, I've been set up. My name's Timmy Britt. I'm an animation artist and an Imagineer. I wrote this amazing book. There was a cast member over at the Magic Kingdom that made the most magic for me today, and it's my birthday. Could you please put this book in a little bag and make sure she gets it? And all I had was the girl's first name, where she worked, and what time she worked, and they did it for me. And they made sure that girl got the other book for herself. So it was just like magic feeding, magic feeding, magic. And I want to say this to your listeners. If you try, if you go out and just try, you can have magic happen for you. It's just a matter of appealing to the magic inside other people. And that's all I did. I got the concierge to do this for me. She got the cast member to do it for her.
Oh, and then lunch. Let me tell that story.
Oh, well, if you want.
I told him I'd take him to his favorite restaurant for lunch and pick the Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And so we went in there, and it was wonderful. The people, the cast members were so helpful and so sweet. And we had three of them just waiting on us hand and foot once I found out about Timmy. And I pulled him aside and I said, listen, it's his birthday. And he always makes a wish on Disney property. And every wish he's made on his birthday on Disney property has come true. And so could we get a little birthday candle with his dessert? And they said, oh, we don't have those anymore. We're not allowed
COVID,
to do it.
We're not allowed to do it anymore.
And one of them said, let me see what I can do. Before that dinner was over, she had
the
found
manager came out and found one birthday candle. Oh. She gave it to me on a cupcake, and then we went outside because we weren't allowed to light it in. So
inside.
Right in front of the castle, I lit the candle and I made a wish. And so hopefully it'll come true. I'm not going to tell you what it is because it's magic. But I have a feeling it's going to.
But he made a wish every time he was on Disney property growing
up.
On
my birthday, yeah.
On his birthday. Yeah. And so I made sure that he was able. I still don't know how they were able to get that birthday candle. I kept it. I put it in.
Oh, they must have ruffled through drawers in the backstage and stuff, asking people. But that's what Disney cast members are willing to do for people. They're willing to go above and beyond if you approach them the right way. Remember, they're people too. So through COVID, they've had people screaming at them and yelling at them. And I don't want to wear my mask and blah, blah, blah. But if you can appeal to the Disney inside them, you'll always get it back. That's what casting does. They hire people that have magic built in them so that they can develop it and hone it into a more magical thing for all the guests. I know this. I'm a part of it. I help create the magic. So I know that if you just apply to the magic inside people's hearts, it will shine through. I can't say that for the rest of the world, but it will definitely happen. At Walt Disney World, and I invite all your guests to go. Yes, you're going to pay a lot of money. Yes, everything's expensive.
It's worth it.
But if you can get there and you can bring that magic with you, you'll get it back tenfold. I promise you that because the cast members there, like you guys have never been through Traditions. I've been through it three times. Right. Traditions instills the pixie dust in you. It's an 8-hour orientation that there's not a dry eye in the house and you get your name tag that day. So Traditions really gets the cast members going. Then they get this wonderful, happy place to work, and they have like all the perks. So they're really happy people to begin with. And if you can just appeal to that sense of, you know, hey, can we make a little magic together? They are always, not 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10.
Oh, their eyes got so bright.
Oh my God, they were so happy. Like the girl was even sad to give her back the book. She's like, this is the coolest thing I've ever had. But she gave it back. And that's what made me say, you know what? Let's give the other book to her. So we gave it to her, and that's so that's the story of the 50 years in between. But I have a lot of things going on now.
Yeah. Hey, I just one more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
About that day.
Yeah, sure.
Did you guys stay for the fireworks?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Catherine, tell me what he was like, and then it didn't let him go after that.
Yeah. Well, again, Timmy's the world's oldest 5-year-old, so it was magical.
That's the best you can do. I turned around looking for my parents like I was when I was 5, because when I saw it when I was 5, I was so enamored. Like the Disney World fireworks are not like other fireworks. They're right there.
Yeah.
You're only 50 feet below them. So the booms go right through your soul and the colors, your peripheral vision is filled with sparks and stuff. So I felt myself looking over my shoulder for my mom and looking over my shoulder for my dad, like I did when I was 5 years old, to look and say, I can't believe it. Now there are strangers behind me this time, but I felt myself doing it as if no time had passed at all. Like I was right back there that first day. And to have that magic, like I've seen those fireworks 1,000 times maybe, but this time it was transformative. It really brought me back. Now she would have no way of knowing that. She just saw me with tears running down my eyes and I was just so happy to be there. And it was my birthday. So if she comes up with one word, yeah, magical. Great job for a writer. Anyway.
I could tell you were just bursting to come into the conversation, so I cut it off.
I think Steve is being really polite, and he likes you, so he wants you to talk more.
Oh, I see.
So I'll get out of the way and let you say some things, because I think Steve really likes you. So sorry, Sheila, but I mean, these two, I don't know what to do. Me and you will run away, Sheila.
No, you know what, Timmy? We'll take it over soon. Don't worry, okay? Yes.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was so enthralled with the fireworks myself. I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to Timmy, but he was really into it.
There was one point during the fireworks, and I have to say this, that there was a little girl and she had dropped her sippy cup, but nobody was paying attention because everybody's looking up. But I saw it fall and she's reaching from her little thing and there's no way she was going to get it out of her little stroller. So I remember being interrupted from the magic to help that little girl. The best part, the reason I'm telling you is when I handed it back to her, she looked at me because she knew I was a stranger and you knew you shouldn't talk to strangers. And when I handed her a sippy cup, I had the biggest smile on my face. And she just started smiling and pointing at me and clapping like she was really little. But I will never forget that moment when I had a chance to just reach out and help another little kid during the fireworks. So for me, I don't know if that's stupid or not, but I just thought it was kind of special.
It was like being a cast member again.
Yeah, really.
You know what, Timmy? I could listen to you forever and ever. I mean, just the emotions. I mean, you're amazing.
Well, I'm not the only one. There's all your listeners love Disney. There's other people that have their own Disney stories. I can really only tell mine, but mine is an in-depth one because I've really dug into animation and worked there for years and then worked in Imagineering for years. When you get to do that, you get to really see. Like a lot of people say, well, I wouldn't want to do that. It would ruin the magic for me. I kind of thought that too at first. But then when I started doing it, I realized it's not about the magic for me. What I'm doing right now is going to be appreciated by people from all over the world for a long, long time. Pandora is structured to last 75 to 100 years. It's only been there for about 5. But the work we put into it and the redundancies to keep it safe and the stainless steels that we use that you know the guests really don't know about, they think it's all real. We had to build it all. It took years and years to do it. But as I was doing it, I realized, you know what? This is no longer about me or Walt. This is about the next generation of people. Like, for instance, just think about this. Tom Brady, 8 Super Bowls he's won? Mm-hmm. I don't have to watch his games. I don't have to be a fan. I don't have to buy his jersey. But guess what? When he has kids, he has to take them to Disney World. You name any celebrity, any politician, they have to go there when they have kids. I do not have to endorse them, but they must come see my work. And that gives you a real sense of pride knowing that people from all walks of life, not just celebrities, will have to one day in your life come and walk through the magnificent magic that is surrounding you when you're in Disney World. And so I really, really took a pride in not worrying about now I know how the magic is done, but the rest of the world doesn't. And now I'm a part of that. It's like going through the looking glass for Alice. Like there's the world and then there's the world that nobody really knows about and you're a part of it. And there was maybe 50 Imagineers and hundreds of other people, but 50 Imagineers really art directing that whole thing. And to be one of those 50 people is an honor I will never forget. And I worked on a lot of things in Walt Disney World, Animal Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, Epcot, and the Magic Kingdom, and Disney Springs. I worked in all 5 areas that Disney has. So I really got to see how it's done and what's going on and to be a part of it. And I might have been a tiny cog, but my eyes were open and my ears were open. I paid attention. So I could remember for the rest of my life and pass on to my kids some of the things that I've had to experience.
And a lot of it's in the book.
Yeah.
Timmy.
You're a tiny cog with a big story.
Yeah. Timmy, I don't know if there's an answer to this, but I'm going to try it anyway. As an Imagineer, I'm sure you've worked on refurbs. I don't know if you've worked on, for example, something like Maelstrom now turning into... Frozen. So my question to you, as Imagineers, as in general, not just you specifically, do they enjoy that? Do they enjoy taking an old ride, making it into a new ride?
No, they hate it. We hate it. We hate it. We hate it. We hate it. But
wow.
Well, I mean, it's a piece of Disney history you're remembering. Okay. And nobody wants to do that. The only thing is, we think to ourselves, well, what about my five-year-old? Is she going to enjoy Frozen or is she going to enjoy Maelstrom? You know, yeah. And I have to say to myself, well, the Maelstrom is a great thing, but if it has to go, then let's give it the best send-off. So we replaced all the parts and pieces from Maelstrom with care. I'm telling you, they were wrapped up and taken away, and you'll see them in the Smithsonian for Disney sometime. Mm-hmm. Sure. But they do take care of all the props and all the parts. They don't throw it away. There's a warehouse in a few different states where they hide some of these things. And so, yes, as Imagineers, we hate having to. A refurb is to take an attraction. After about 25 years, it needs a paint job.
Yeah.
We try to do it every five. So any job you redo would be considered a refurb. But to rebuild, to redo an attraction with like Maelstrom, and Frozen is a great example, because here's this great attraction with a great track and it's got great everything. But it was outdated and it was old. And the problem was, less and less people were coming to see it. So you'd go to Epcot. There's so much in Epcot to see that the country of Norway, who invests in the, you know, each country, like Japan mm-hmm. invests in the Japan pavilion. England invests in the English pavilion. They hire only cast members from those countries to specifically keep you immersed in that land, in that area. So to see, like we go and we'd see, okay, today we had, you know, 1,500 people ride it, and it was a Friday. Then on Monday, there's only 50 people that ride it. We start to see, well, there could be more magic. And so somewhere in there is the balance. We gave this 50 years, or say 45 years, or whatever. I guess it would be about 35 years since, you know, Epcot was done. And instead of spending the money to redo a ride that now only has, you know, maybe, you know, a smaller amount of riders every day, Frozen, when we did Frozen, there was lines around the whole lake for people to go in when it first opened. And now to this day, there's thousands and thousands of people enjoying that magic every day. So there's a payoff to it. Yes, you're taking down a piece of Disney history, but you're also creating the Disney future for other generations. And things don't last forever. They have to be rebuilt. They have to be repainted. They have to be touched up. You know, the wear and tear. Like, you're in Florida. There's 2-3 hurricanes a year. That's not to mention the sun. Oh, my God. It is the most oppressive thing in the world.
Yeah.
And it's a swamp. So there's, like, bugs. And all. It's amazing how Disney can stay as fresh and as clean. It's because the hard work and dedication of the Imagineering team that goes out every day and has a checklist. Okay, this needs to be done and this needs to be done. And then it doesn't sit on a whiteboard. No, it goes and gets done. And that takes dedication. So it's a 50-50 thing. You're kind of like, well, I'm tearing down Disney history, but then I'm bringing the birth of something brand new that I'll be here for the next 50 years to 75 years. So there is some beauty in doing it, and there is some heartbreak. I don't know how to tell you about the bittersweetness of it, but that's exactly what it is. Yeah. I do love being able to say I was the last one to ride Maelstrom and the first one to ride.
Oh, cool.
That's cool.
As an Imagineer, like, Tom Brady can't say that, you know?
Well, something else is that's cool about that story is when he was telling it to me, you know, he got real emotional because the Maelstrom was one of his favorite rides as a kid.
Yeah, I loved it.
And so I had to, I wrote that into the story and then the part about how they built Frozen. Well, then I got to go to Epcot and ride Frozen, and I was able to see all the things that he told me, and that was really magical for me because I had kind of the inside scoop.
Yeah, they kept the same track, basically. So, like, the same dips and the same stops and all the things were there. It's just everything around you was different. And so I got to we almost had to ride it twice because I wouldn't shut up the first time. I kept, you know, I'll talk off a tin monkey, so I was telling her, look, and here's where we did this, and here's where we did that. So she's like, let me just enjoy it. And they did a magnificent job, the people that put in the props and the music and the stuff.
I did go back a second time.
Yeah, so we really, really got a great experience. That was a great question, by the way, and a tough one to answer because it is very bittersweet. It goes both ways. But that's the best I can do to answer, is that you have to think about the past and never forget it. but you also have to consider the future. And that's what Walt did. He bought all that land in Florida, and they've only used a fraction of it still, believe it or not.
Right.
And as expensive as real estate is, $500 million is what Universal spent for the new Epic Park. And it's just, it's actually a 500 square acre park that is just a dirt lot that they're going to eventually, then the COVID happened and they didn't build much on it yet. But Universal's building a whole nother park called Epic Park. Well, that is the price of real estate. When Walt went down and kind of bought it up under other names so he wouldn't get charged, you know, through the roof, he bought enough land, and here's what he said. He said, I want to buy enough land that the imagination never has a border. It never runs out of a place to grow. So, sure, they have to move roads and cut down trees and all that stuff and, you know, pump out swamps. And, I mean, there's nothing they can't do. But it does take money, and it does take a lot of effort and a lot of patience from the guests. But there's enough land there to build so many more things. To get things done under a budget or in a certain time frame or without having to go too extravagant, they will have to sometimes save. Like the pavilion in Norway was just, you know, everybody's seen the Maelstrom, and that was really the only thing they had, and it was great. But they just felt like Norway was like, we really need some help here. The movie Frozen comes out, and it was a symbiotic thing. It just fits so perfectly. So I think that that's one example where I'm not going to say that Frozen is better than the Maelstrom. I'm just going to say that it was a lot more Disney than Maelstrom. Maelstrom wasn't really part of a Disney thing. It was more of a Norway thing. And when Norway seceded and said, okay, we can go with Frozen, absolutely.
How do you feel about changing things from the countries that are representing it to an IP like Frozen? Is that a problem, or?
Not see it, but money that they could make. Like Norway makes money on that. Norway invests in it, and then they make back. So when they were seeing the money dry out and just have the Maelstrom, when Disney presented them with this idea, because if they didn't, Disney was going to build Frozen somewhere else. Frozen was going to happen. And it might have been a better ride, honestly, because we were stuck with the track that we had for Maelstrom.
Yeah.
So good ride.
It was a really great ride. And if you're
been on it yet.
It's amazing. You got to go home and pretend you're a little girl, though. Remember that. You got to.
He'd find that easy.
I will wear my Elsa dress.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, and you
let it go.
And you know, that's not the only story that he told about changing an old attraction into a new one. When he was at Universal Studios doing Harry Potter, they were doing.
We had to tear down the Dueling Dragons, which was. Just this amazing icon in Florida. Yeah, everybody loved it.
And all his artists were crying.
Oh, they were crying their eyes out because now they're like in their early 30s and they had grown up with the Dueling Dragons. And I told them, I said, you can savor those tears now that we're tearing this down, because they're watching pieces of the track being parted off on trucks and they're seeing big things being dug and it's all gone, man, as they were starting to build the new attraction and we were going to theme it out and we were going to make it real for people. I said, you go ahead and savor those tears, because I'm telling you what, in 2.5 years, you're going to come in here in your play clothes. You're going to be just like all the other guests, but you're going to know what they don't know, because I'm going to have you paint every rock and every wall and every crease and every doorway and every prop. You're going to build this attraction for the rest of the world. So those tears, you save them tears that you're shedding right now, because you're going to have twice as many when you watch the guests and hear all the oohs and ahs and wows. Grandpa, look. And Grandma, look at this. As Harry Potter comes back to life through the imaginations and the talent of you artists standing in front of me today.
And there's no better roller coaster in the world.
It is.
Than Hagrid's Motorbike Adventure.
It is an amazing
ride. Yeah.
It won Roller Coaster of the Year after we built it. And those girls never did it before. Now are at an award ceremony wearing tuxedos and dresses and stuff and accepting the awards and going to the banquet for it. And I had already moved since then because it takes a while to put that together. But they sent me pictures, and I was so proud of them, because they came to me and said, we're artists, and nobody will give us a chance. And I said, well, let me see your work. And their work was amazing, man. I can't even tell you how beautiful. I'm like, well, that's just not right. And they said, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I work backstage, kind of. And they're like, Timmy, we all work backstage. What do you do? So when I told them what I did, I said, I'm an Imagineer, and I'm one of the ones that helped build Pandora. They were like, no way. You got to help us. And I said, listen, I can't promise you to get any Imagineering helmets or anything. But I can hire you as artist, and if you'll come in and let me tutor you and train you. We spent 6 months in the hot Florida sun in this laydown yard, which is just a bunch of dirt, really, and some Connexes. and we build samples. And I'd say, now paint that rock and make me believe it's real. Put moss on that rock. Make rust run down from this pipe. Make that look like iron. I know that's concrete, but make it look like wood. And I'd train them and show them how layer after layer we could really pull this together. Once they were ready, then we attacked Hagrid's. And once we did, these girls were unstoppable. That's Robin and Meg I'm talking about, the ones I mentioned earlier. They were two of them, and then there was a girl named MJ. And they were my three main artists. And then I built 14 more artists behind them, but those three were my main three. I called them the misfit toys because they all came from different backgrounds. Nobody ever gave them a chance. And now a year later, after those first tears when they saw it being ripped down, to the tears that they cried when they got off the ride with the guests for the first time, and then they won the Roller Coaster of the Year award. It is, talk about coming full circle to a dream coming true. So not only now is it working out for me as the art director, but the students that I had who became art directors in their own right through this project, now they've learned so much that Meg and Robin, once Disney and Universal stopped because of the COVID, they went out and started painting murals and things, because we also not only did the roller coaster, but we did an 18,700 square foot mural of the Dark Forest on the walls there. And I know this isn't Disney, this is Universal, but I have to tell you, they tried it out in California. They hated the first one. They made them do it a second time. And then they saw our mural and they kicked themselves. They said, that's what we wanted out in California. So I'm like, oh, too bad. My girls did this. So I really just had a microphone. I'm sorry. Walkie-talkie, laser pointer, and some binoculars. And I was 100 yards away because this is the biggest wall mural up and down the East Coast all the way over to the Mississippi River in the United States. And it's in Universal Studios, and it is gorgeous. It is so beautiful.
You had birds flying into it.
The trees were so real. Yeah, these birds. Wow. I kept saying that. I kept saying, because they lined up real trees, and then we painted the wall with trees so the forest could continue. Well, while we're doing it, we're watching birds fly right into it. I'm going, this is not good. First of all, I don't want the birds to die. Second of all, once they hit the wall, guess what happens? Then they fall right down onto the track, and if a track is coming through at 65 miles an hour, little girl gets hit by a dead bird, there's no magic in that. So because of that, I went to the Universal. I said, I really think we need to put up just some thin nets. And then we did. And they put up some thin nets, and the problem stopped. So that was how
Timmy,
it stopped.
How long did that take to paint then?
The mural, well, we only had 6 weeks. They said, it's the last thing we want to do, but we've been dreading it. We can't find anybody to do it. You guys have done such a great job with the scenic work. Can you do murals? What they didn't know is that I painted 500 murals up and down the East Coast before I even went to Disney World. I'm a full-on artist. I can sculpt, I can carve, I can paint, I'm into it. I'm into it. So I said, yeah, we can do it. And they said, can you do it in 6 weeks? I said, we can do it in five. I was just being cocky. I was. But that's what got us that. No, I'm not cocky, really. I'm just funny. Anyway, we ended up doing it in 4.5 weeks. We beat our 5-week record. And 3 days a week at that time we were doing it, it rained. So we'd only get up there a couple hours a day. But I had 14 people up on 6 tiers of scaffolding. Not airbrushing, but we're using like a spray gun to get most of the wall done. So you don't roll it. You know, it's a giant wall. You get a compressor and you throw air on it through an air gun. And that way, when they got that done, then we had our base in. And then y'all just took brushes. And what I did was I took this little wall that the guests will never see that's back behind, like, backstage in Universal. And I said, look, we're going to Bob Ross this. That's the way to do this. Work back and work forward. And I showed them the simple designs. And they said, that doesn't look like a tree. I said, I know, but come with me. And I took them 50 yards back. I said, now look at it. What does it look like? Oh, my God, it looks like a real tree. I said, see? That's the beauty of perspective. So once they got that down and we did a little practicing, they all did their own little trees. And then I said, no, let's go up on the wall and do it for real. They took to it like a duck to water, right? Or a fish to worms. I don't know. They just wrapped themselves around it. They knew what it meant. And when they found out from Universal Studios, the head of Universal Studios, that they were disappointed in the mural, that because they had the same ride out in California. That's where they did it first. So it was a big hit. And so they decided, okay, let's bring it into, this is the perfect thing to bring between the train station and Hogsmeade was this. Yeah. Okay. So okay.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm totally pulling a blank on this Imagineer's name, but he was responsible for doing a lot of the rock work back in the 60s, 70s. Jürger?
Oh,
oh, it's killing me. I can't think of his
name. Oh, I can't think of it either. Yeah. Yeah. That's where it all started, actually.
Honestly, okay. Right. Right. Started. Now, he has a tombstone in.
Oh, in the Haunted Mansion.
In the Haunted Mansion.
Yes. Yes.
With. Okay. All right.
Yeah, but that's all true. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, for you, because I wish I could remember his name. Maybe I'll put it in later.
So I'm going to Google it as soon as we get off the
phone. I know. I can't think of it. I've been trying to. But with all the stuff you've done, if you could have a tombstone at the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, that would be the greatest thing. Great thing to have. Like, I honestly, I don't deserve it. There, I'm telling you, I'm very, like, outgoing, and I'm very, you know, extroverted, and I, you know, I have
never
a lot of
know.
Art. But there's other Imagineers that did just as much work, if not more work, than me, and they deserve all the credit too. Like, I was the least talented Imagineer, if you can imagine that. That's how talented people are. So to say that I don't deserve it is the right thing to say. But boy, oh boy, would I love it.
Hey, what would your epitaph be, though?
I'm sorry?
What would your epitaph be if you could write it for yourself?
You know, off the top of my head, I'd have to put, like, here lies Timmy. Or is he? So they'd have to look around. Well, wait a minute. Maybe he's not there. Maybe he's that's a great question. I wish I had more time, but that's what I can come up with off the top of my head. That's really clever. Thank you, Steve. That was a great question. And what a great honor just to think of that. I always told my kids, I said, when I'm gone, you're going to get my ashes and the ashes of my favorite dog, Louie, he's gone now, but I have his ashes. And you're going to put them in a thermos. And you're going to wait until everybody's looking up at the fireworks, and you're going to dump my ashes into the moat. That was the plan. Now, I've since found out that the Haunted Mansion has a special vacuum.
That's right. Because
so many people bring the ashes of their loved ones and dump them in the Haunted Mansion. Yep. So that's the one place where people dump ashes. And Disney has a special vacuum just to vacuum up the ashes. So I want to stick to my plan and just go in the moat. That way, it's just part of the ecosystem. It's just dirt in the moat. But
I'm going to Bay Lake.
Bay Lake, yeah. You know, I know so many people that love Bay Lake. They always say the same thing too. Like, that's where they want to be. That's great. I think that that having a tombstone at the Magic Kingdom in the Haunted Mansion would be just the greatest honor. I don't even know another honor better than that for me, because that's my favorite attraction. Like, I love everything at Walt Disney World, but the Haunted Mansion, I have to go on every time I go there, because it was the first ride I went on when I was 5. And so I try to keep that tradition. Now, we went this year, and the line was so long. It was so bad. Like, there was, and it was only at 70% capacity, but yet it was all Americans, and it was packed. And for some reason, and I'm not trying to be mean here, but it was big Americans, like really big. So you couldn't get past them. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to say, like, where 3 people could fit by, it just seemed like everybody had gained a lot of weight and come to Walt Disney World. And that's what happens when people sit COVID. In the pandemic for 2 years and don't go anywhere. They eat and they sit on their butt and watch Netflix, and then they come to Disney World.
Except so for Catherine.
It just seemed that day that, or maybe it was the fact that Catherine was losing weight by the minute, so everybody looked bigger. Because she was just dropping weight. Like, every day she'd lose 5 pounds. I'm like, this can't be healthy. And she's like, no, I got this. Now she's leveled off at it. She lost 60 pounds in the last couple of months. And I'm not trying to fat shame anybody. I'm just saying that when you have this confined space and there's lots of guests that are extra large, it's hard to get by. It's hard to move. It's hard to do anything. So we had to pace ourselves a little bit more. And that's what reminded me most of being back when I was 5, was how crowded it was. Except when I was 5 years old, it was way more crowded. But at 70% capacity, I was impressed by that, because with the pandemic and the traveling on airplanes and what people had to do to get there and the price of it all, God bless the 70% of, you know, the people that showed up that day, because it was a beautiful, wonderful day. And I will never forget the first time when I was 5, and I'll never forget when I was 55. It was really an amazing job. I'm so glad that I got to do this with you guys today too, by the way, because of all the podcasts I've done, the Imagineering podcast is one of my favorites. You know, it's not fair. I love them all, but you guys have such charm about you and such a love for what you're doing that your efforts should be rewarded with somebody with the same amount of effort back. So whenever I get a chance to talk to you guys, I try to give you everything I have, tell the truth, be honest, and bring all the magic that I have. And I want you to know, thank you for having this podcast. It's not just me and you guys and Catherine that enjoy it. There's a whole world of people out there listening, and from all walks of life and from all over. And I hope that they get a chance to pick up the book, Extraordinary Everyday Magic, maybe peek through it, get an inside look, and then go to the parks and compare my book to what they see and what they experience. I'm so privileged and so lucky to have had the life I've had. I thank God and my parents and what for all that, because I'm, like I said, I'm just a street rat from Philly. I mean, I do have a lot of education and I have practiced. I never give up, but I'm still no better than any other Imagineer. They were all, everybody there was there because they had their heart in it. They wanted to pull it off and they wanted to do it for the rest of the guests. In fact, I was in Disney World twice last year. And when we went the first time, it was to see if I could give tours to other people. So I didn't know really how to arrange that, but my team was with me. I had three people with me that day. And Stephen Moore, he handles logistics for the team kind of. He's like, stand by here and take pictures since you build it. And he just said that just like I'm talking to you now. Since you build it, just stand here. And guests heard him. And they came over and they said, you built this? I said, well, I'm one of, 50 other Imagineers that helped with this. Yeah, but for 3 years, I was up here on scaffolding 200 feet in the air, painting all this and carving it and building it and assembling it and putting it together. And from then on, I gave my tour because all those guests then followed me through all of Animal Kingdom.
It was like the Pied Piper.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. When people get their hands on an Imagineer that admits that he's an Imagineer, they just want to be near you, Two girls followed me to Universal Studios so I could give them a tour of Harry Potter. They were freaking out. Yeah.
There was one moment that was really fun. We were in line for Pandora, and he was telling us about everything in the queue, and we painted this, and we did that, and we got to a place where they had the Navi hands and they had the human hands. And he said, hey, everybody, watch this. And he put his hand up on one of the human handprints, and it was his. And so we had...
The last thing we got to do was take our hands and put them in paint and put them next to a Navi hand so that it shows the symbiotic relationship between humans and the Navi. And so we each got to do that. And I remember where I put mine, of course, and I did mine in red. And it's along the queue as you're working your way through the mountain to get to the ride. And I put my hand on top of it and it disappeared. Because I took my time. I rolled the paint on my hand really slow, covered every crevice of it. And that paint doesn't come off right away. Like, you really need to work to get it off. But I didn't care. This was one of the last things I did as an Imagineer. And then I got to ride it before it was even open. So I was so in love with the ride, too. The ride is just magnificent. Oh,
yes.
So that's really cool. If you look in the queue of Pandora, my handprint is one of the...
We really slowed down the queue that day.
And I bet everybody complained.
Three families in front of us, three families behind us, and the ones past them were still trying to hear what was going on.
Yeah. Because I wasn't trying to give away any of the magic, but I do know a lot of details that guests walk through and just miss. And if you hear, you see this, and this is why we did this, and this is why we did that, and this is what this represents, and this is what that means. And if you look up there real close, you can see a hidden Mickey that we put. People are so fascinated by that. They just love being a part of that kind of magic. And if I can provide that for people without giving away the magic, like, I didn't tell them how we did stuff. I just said, it's there, and this is why, and this is there, and that's why. Yeah. Because I was in the mood to just give tours anyway, because people just are fascinated with it all. And I have the opportunity to tell them, so... I was practicing what it would be like to give a tour, and it worked. People were following me everywhere.
It's amazing because you're so shy.
Yeah. Actually, I would think you would be a great person to give tours, tour guides.
But wear a plaid shirt.
Plaid skirt, whatever. You know what? To our listeners at this moment, if you want to feel that bit closer to Timmy Britt, when you're in the queue line, look for those red hands and put your hand next to his hand.
Yeah, they can put it right on top of it. Yep. Because
and then wash.
Use the paint that's going to last for 25 years, so or more, and it's indoor, so it won't have the weather on it, so it might be there a bit longer.
But then sanitize afterwards.
Yeah, exactly right. Sanitize afterwards. Yeah, there is what we call people varnish on things because it's that's what we call it. Yeah, when people go through the queues and the railings, they can't help it. There's skin cells, there's grease, there's oil, there's suntan lotion. And so after a while, it creates this black varnish, and we call it people varnish. So that is from 4 feet down has to be repainted more often than anything else. Not because it's missing the paint, but because the paint has been invaded by people varnish. It's black, ick everywhere. And that's just from millions of people going through every day touching it,
That's why a podcast, the People Varnish podcast.
That's cool.
That's hilarious. That's so funny.
Okay, so Timmy, you left Disney.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of questions. One, what was it like on your last day, knowing that you wasn't going to come back the next day to work. And the second one is, where's your life going now? What's your future plans?
Well, they're great questions. So, all right, so we'll start a little sad and then we'll get happy. The sad part is when I knew that it would be my last day, A, no work got done. It was coffees and talking and hanging out and saying goodbye. Inside me was this, my heart was broken, really. I got to be honest with you, because I knew I'd be back, but not in that capacity anymore. The COVID was rampant running, and we had no, see, China has 4 Disney World, so they knew about the pandemic before anyone else did, and that's just the truth of it. So when Disney knows in Florida, in China, they're going to tell California, California's going to tell Florida. So it was early in January of 2020 that I knew about the pandemic. Before a lot of other Americans actually knew what was going on, it wasn't until January 11th somebody even mentioned it, really. But it was like January 4th. I'll never forget it. As it's just a sad day. So I just determined myself to pick up a brush, put one last stroke on the walls that we did for Epcot, and then I let my team. So I made a lot of money. So some of the people that made less money than me got to stay a little longer. And we were just base painting. So it wasn't really a big, there was no great art thing going on. It was just painting this wall this color and painting this wall that color. But I made sure to go ahead and put one last brush stroke on the wall. And then my bosses let me cut out. They're like, you don't have to stay the whole day. We'll pay you for the whole day, but you can rock on if you want. I said, all right, thanks. So it was with tears in my eyes as they're streaming. Like, you know, when you work there, you know all the roads, you know all the signs, you know where you're going. And they don't mean anything to you every day. Every day you're there, every day you see them. But when you know it's your last day, you make mental pictures. You take a little picture of each, like Timberlake Road and like different little street signs that you'd pass that are colored in purple or yellow or whatever. I'm in Texas now. The signs here aren't purple. There's nothing that says Welcome to Walt Disney World around me. So every bus that has Cinderella on it, every little detail that makes Disney magic, you're really trying to just absorb it all. So that's how my last day. It was very bittersweet because I loved what I was doing, but they said, yeah, there's something coming and we're going to start unloading everybody. And it was only like a couple of weeks later that everyone else was gone, but I got paid a lot of money and there was no reason for me to sit there and base paint when they knew they were shutting down. In fact, the company that Disney hired, they all took a great big hit. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. This guy that has the home theme Orlando and then Robin and Meg and then Charlotte, they're really doing everything they can to keep the Disney art and the Disney magic alive. And so I wanted to mention them because it's been a while since we have talked on this podcast and a lot of great things have happened. One thing that's happened for me that's amazing, though, is we wrote the book. Then we did a mini little book tour and it was very successful. I told you about the 25 5-star reviews. Like, I'm so flattered and impressed and grateful. But then I went home for Thanksgiving to Philadelphia to see my parents and my kids who are up there, too. And while I was there, the Philadelphia School Board found out I was there. And they offered to take me to a meeting. I had no idea what it was about. It was the top of the Four Seasons, 67 stories in the air in a glass elevator to get top to this 5-star hotel, like dining room place, where there were kids from the local schools playing instruments for the people while they would drink and party and have meals. I sat down with the head of the school board in Philadelphia. And he said, what would it take to get you to come up here and start teaching the kids of Philadelphia? It's your hometown. Would you ever consider coming back? How about if we pay you this money? And he slides a piece of paper and has a number on it. And I said, I'll do it. Now I get to go back up north, be where my parents are, who are elderly now and really need my help. And my kids are there, which I had always planned on going back anyway. But it opens up 400,000 kids that I can sell books to in my class. I can teach. And not just teach them how to draw. It's not about art, really. It's about teaching them how to build things and create things. And then I just call Disney Universal and I can start sending down well-trained kids right out of high school. Or if they want to go to college and then come back, I can help them out, get jobs with their lives and change their lives. Because I want to show them, okay, well, this wall is, you know, 1,000 square feet and you only get 400 square feet out of a gallon of paint. How many gallons of paint do you think we're going to need, guys? And how much do they cost? And I'm going to have them work it out, like what it costs to do the project, what we're going to need, how much time it's going to take. So there's actuarial stuff, there's quoting stuff. It's not just art, it's the whole project. And we're gonna go to like the local cheesesteak places and pizza places and the local restaurants and the supermarkets and build 3D things. Like, imagine going by a supermarket and coming out of the walls, this hand, and it's just holding an apple. That's all, real simple. But it's coming out of the wall. It's not painted on the wall, it's coming out of the wall. with a mural on it. Well, I'm going to have kids do this because I'm a good teacher. I am. You know, kids love my energy and they know that I won't quit on them. And I try to reach inside each kid and find the superhero in each kid. Everybody has a superpower. Everybody. Sheila, you do. Steve, you do. Catherine does. It's, you don't find it sometimes when you're like, maybe when you're born, you realize your talent. Like with me, I could draw early on and I knew where I was headed. Other people, though, don't reach it till they're maybe even 40. But that means their whole life was honing that skill. Then they're 40 and it comes to fruition. And now they're rock stars. So either you hone it from a little kid or you hone it your whole life until you realize what it is. But either way, I want to be part of that process to take these kids and say, look, I know maybe you're not good at drawing, but look how good you are at figuring out or estimating a job. And then I'm going to have the kids go to these local places, tell them what they'd like to do for them. And then who's going to say no to a bunch of kids in the public school that want to help? I want Absolutely. To be hands-on. I want to be with the kids and bring these little boys and girls a chance to become great men and women in the world. I think the problem with a lot of the problems we're having in America is education. Teachers don't want to go. I'm not knocking teachers, but with COVID, they're like, oh, we don't want to go. We'll go remote. Nobody's learned anything. People are like 30, 40, and 50% behind because of COVID. Well, it's almost over. And so I'm just waiting for the Omicron to pass, and then Philadelphia's going to bring me up. And when they do, they built this $80 million school called the Propel School. And to take some of the advanced kids and give them opportunities with some rock stars. And they said, we would love for you to be our head. They have a program called STEM, which is science, mm-hmm. technology, engineering, and mathematics. But there's no mm-hmm. art in it. They said, we're changing it to STEAM. We need art. You're an Imagineer, an animation artist from Walt Disney World and Universal. Would you please come up and help us? And I said, and then when they showed me the number, I said, yeah, okay, I'll be there. Yeah. No problem. So that would give me summers off. A great, respectable way to end my career is giving back because I can't take it with me. And what good is all this knowledge if I can't share it with the next generation? So just like I took the Maelstrom and turned it into Frozen, I'm going to build or find the next Walt. You know, Walt made that wish before he died. I made it my whole life's journey. Now that wish I made at the Magic Kingdom maybe can come true and I can find someone else that can go ahead and go down and start just keeping the magic alive for people from all over the place. So that's a real happy ending to my story, and I'm really grateful to have that opportunity.
And the story you was telling about being an artist early on reminds me of at the beginning of every chapter, I put a quote from Walt Disney, and this one says, a person should set his goals as early as he can and devote all his energy and talent to getting there. With effort, he may achieve it, or he may find something even more rewarding. But in the end, no matter the outcome, he will know he has been alive. And that's just Timmy.
That's a quote from Walt Disney.
I'll give you your final challenge. I know you're going to have all these kids to deal with.
Yeah.
When you're in Philly.
Yeah.
But the one thing that if you really want to spread the magic, I want you to go to Lincoln Financial Field when the Eagles lose a game, and I want you to really spread that magic there.
You know I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan, right?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, I don't like the Eagles. I can't
You won't be going there. Never mind.
I'm going to go to Lincoln Financial Field now, throw eggs everywhere, and say, this is from Steve, and that's from Steve. Potatoes and eggs all over those Eagles fans. I love the Phillies, the Sixers, the Flyers.
Scratch that request.
I got you.
Okay, I do have a couple of comments.
Just between him and I.
Yeah, I know, because I don't like sports. So, but above my head and over and beyond.
Wait, hold on. Let me just say this real quick.
Sure.
I found a writer who lives in Dallas, Texas. I grew up my whole life as a Dallas Cowboy fan. And I worked for NFL Films for a little while, so I really got to see a lot of the NFL. It was really, really cool. I'm a big fan. But how crazy is it that the writer who wants to write my book is 20 minutes from the Dallas Cowboy Stadium, where I've never been able to be here? This year for Christmas, Catherine got me a ticket to go see the Redskins play the Cowboys in Dallas Stadium, and the Cowboys won 56-14 while I was there freaking out, screaming my head off. In fact, I lost my voice. I was supposed to be recording the audio version of my book, but because of the Cowboys games every week and me screaming, by Monday and Tuesday, I don't even have a voice left. So that's just a little tying together. That just magic just works if you really believe in it and you devote yourself to it. Like, not only did I get to do all the stuff in Disney and Universal, but then when I go to write the book, my writer is from the same place as my favorite football team, and I got to experience it. So there's just a little bit of magic in my personal life I just wanted to share with you guys.
Well, I'll tell you what, Timmy. I mean, that really is...
She couldn't give a damn.
I know you don't care, but I know.
No.
I do, but...
Okay, I mean, that is kind of a great way to start winding this show down.
Yeah.
Going back to teaching, I mean, we talked about the tombstone outside the Haunted Mansion, but as you're sharing your dream of what you're going to be doing with these kids, for me, listening to you, that's so much better than a tombstone, because you're leaving a legacy. You're leaving... I don't know. It's
well, I'm a fun teacher, so I want to change these kids' lives. It's not just about art. There'll be a lot of art, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But
through the art process, being an Imagineer is not just about art. It's about a belief system, an understanding of the whole thing. Like, I had to go to school for business building systems engineering, and I had to go to school for art. So there's science and there's engineering as well as art. And that's what I want to bring to these kids, the engineering part of it, the art part of it, and all that. And then if I can, even if I don't get to see it, if just one of my students goes down and makes a difference in Walt Disney World, my life will have come full circle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I do have a question for Catherine.
Okay.
Okay. I know you are the parents of a book. Now, I also know that, Timmy, you became an adopted fur daddy to a little cat.
I didn't know that.
Yes. I know these things. I did see you get all scratched up once on Instagram by the cat.
Yeah, can you believe it hit me and I'm allergic? Oh, it was horrible. Go ahead.
I think the cat was on the roof or something. You were trying to... Okay. So, Catherine, my question to you. If Timmy is moving, who gets the cat?
It's my cat that will probably crawl into Timmy's suitcase because he loves him more than he loves me.
Well, can you blame him? No, I'm just kidding. I brush the cat, I feed the cat, I spend all my time with the cat.
I never asked you to do any of those things, but the cat loves Timmy.
Yeah. Even when he bites me, he's just playing. He doesn't know I'm allergic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a sweet question, Sheila. You're really kind. You must have saw that on Instagram and remembered to ask. Yeah. She called him Swayze. Catrick Swayze was what she called him.
Yeah, Catrick Swayze, because he's so pretty.
He's really pretty. Aww. But he started bringing home dead bunnies, man. Dead squirrels. And I said, you have no heart. You're stone cold. And his eyes are like ice. They're the color of blue ice. So stone cold worked for me. So he doesn't even know he has a name. You know, he's pain in the butt cat. But I call him stone cold in it. Kind of stuck. So now all Instagram calls him Stone Cold. So Catherine can have fun trying to call him Patrick Swayze, but he doesn't answer to that.
He doesn't answer to anything. He's a cat.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Sheila, thank you. Very personal and really nice. Thank you for that. You're an amazing host.
I've still got another quick couple of questions, and they're very short answers. Last time you came on our show, we always do this, you know, where we ask questions for our guests, first-time guests.
Yeah.
And you turned it around on us. You started asking us what our favorite character was and stuff. Well, I'm looking at the time now, and once again, I'm not going to be able to do it. But you see,
I have to answer those questions all the time. You never get asked those questions. So for me, to hear from you is a real treat for me. I know that maybe your guests don't want to hear it, but for me personally, I love hearing other people's interactions. It's always blah, 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 Timmy, Timmy, Timmy. So Sheila and Steve, when I got to hear from you guys, like, that warms my heart. So I'm sorry I took over like that.
No. You know what, Timmy? I will always forgive you. I will always forgive you. Because there's a saying, when you go to Disney, always leave something that you can go back to go and do. And I see that with this podcast. We are not done with you. You might be moving further up north.
We'll do it from Philly. Yeah. I'll have my students come on and tell you what they've learned.
I would love to know. Yeah. I want to follow your future on how it's going with the school and the book and how Catherine's coping with the cat missing Timmy.
We're friends for life. There's no way out. The only way out of this relationship is in a box, and I'm not even sure that's going to do it, girl.
Right.
I'm keeping you guys. Yeah. And Sheila, that English accent, oh, my God. Like, my friend Charlotte Downing is from England, And so when we talk, she's got the same accent, and I just can't tell you. It drives me out of my mind. I love it so much.
Yeah, it drives me too. You could yell at me.
Steve.
Steve chased you down, man. That accent just...
Well, there's a couple of things. One, I do need the social media for the vacations home. And also, I might be looking at seeing if they will come. You don't have to do it now, Catherine. We can put it into the show notes.
Okay.
But I would like to have their information personally, because maybe we can help promote them on what they're doing on a future episode with us.
He would love to be on your show and talk about it, honestly, if you wanted to have a podcast with him. He's a real articulate guy. He's really bright. I've known him for a year, so he's vetted. He's not a creepy guy or a sleazy guy. He's just like a real estate guy that had an idea. Hey, if I can turn some of these homes. In fact, if you wanted to have Robin and Megan on, they would probably do a show with you too. They're on.
Yeah. The only one question I have, will they let me talk though? No. Or are they like
yes,
you?
Yes, they're not like me. No, you can do all the talking.
There's only one Timmy.
And we love him. We love him. Believe me. Love having you on the show.
Probably would forgive me because I work so hard for all of them.
Oh, yeah.
They can go have magic. And if they just have to put up with me talking for a little while, I'm so sorry. But the other people I'm telling you about are way less extroverted. I'm a street rat. These are like genuine, real people.
Yeah, so they'll listen to and answer your questions.
What question am I not answering? Come on, I'm here for you. What do you ask me?
And this is why we want Timmy back on, because we just love you. We love your stories.
Well, I have fun when I'm on your show, and I think it comes out in my voice because I'm really genuinely happy and sincerely grateful to be here. There's an excitement to that. There's a magic to it. And if I can give that to you guys in this, you know, 1 hour, 2 hour show, whatever it is, then you're darn right I'm gonna, because that's what your listeners deserve. They tune in, they've had a long day, they worked, and they just want to sit back and just kind of listen. And so I try to deliver for them that genuine, sincere magic. And you guys can mock me all you want, but it's fun for not just me, but for everyone, and you know that. So
yeah.
And we kid you because we love you.
Oh, I love you guys.
And that's the comfort level we do have with you, because I don't think we're normally this rude to our other guests.
Can I offer you guys something?
Sure.
Pick a movie, pick a character, pick something, and I will make it Timmy Britt original painting, and I'll get Catherine to mail it to you guys, and you can frame it and hang it up. You guys have the same house, I imagine, or no?
So far.
Well, it depends if we argue.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to know if you needed two pieces or if you needed one. I could make you a beautiful piece that has to do maybe with the monorail or something, for the monorail tails. And
oh
then
my gosh, that would
I'll
be
sign it. There'll be no prints. The only thing is I'll do, I'll take a copy of the picture. I'll put it on Instagram to show people. And then I'll just mail it to you and give it to you in gratitude for all you've done and how kind you've been to me.
That would pick this up so much to us, Timmy. Yeah.
And then you can, it's a great conversation piece. You can tell people about it and stuff. And it'll be really, absolutely. I'll take my time on it, make it really nice.
Beautiful.
How about if we give you some information through text message when we're done?
Okay.
And back an address. And Catherine, you'll mail this to them, make sure they get it. Yeah. She's not, this is, you got to talk. We're only on audio.
Yes.
Thanks. She's like shaking her head. If we were on audio, we'd just be talking about my hair because I got a haircut. I look so good right now.
Yes, he does, listeners. I can see him at this moment. He has not done.
I really am more modest than that. I'm just kidding.
You haven't done your smoldering look tonight for us.
Oh, here you go. Ready?
Oh, there you go.
We need the...
The eyebrow goes up and the lips turn. Yeah.
No, we need the Olaf smolder.
What's that, Steve?
The Olaf smolder. Have you seen that?
That's so funny. Yeah, you guys are covered with Disney magic, and if it wasn't for people like you, there'd be so many people that maybe there's people that can't ever get to Disney World for one reason or another, but they have you guys. And so I'd like to think that Walt has kind of been watching after you guys, because to name your podcast Monorail Tales, first of all, genius, and then to be so open, so friendly, so magical, so knowledgeable, so well-read and articulate is really nice for the guests. I'm telling you, there's a lot of things that Walt must watch out for, but I know that you're one of them. So keep up.
And we still have Sheila on, too.
And then we have Sheila. That's funny. funny.
Okay, Timmy, here's my deal. I am going to, we do need to reconnect, yes, in a, you know, later on in the year. Somehow, Catherine, you're going to have to teach him about Skype so he knows how to get on.
I'm going to fly you up to Philly and you're just going to help me.
Oh, there you go.
I know what you're asking.
I have students in the school that know how to do it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. The school. That's one thing about having students is they can do all this stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we will have you back on. We will get updates on how your life's moving forward.
Well, October's a long way off, but maybe for my birthday next year, instead of going to Disney World, we can have a little Disney World on the podcast on my birthday. Maybe it's October. It's 9 months from now, but
that'll work.
I mean, that's I'm thinking that maybe we could share.
No, you know what? That's a great idea. One of our co-hosts was pregnant a few years ago, and we did a surprise baby shower. So I can pull it off. I can pull it off, Timmy.
And I'll have a lot more to tell you guys by then. It's like 9 months away. So, you know, life just keeps coming at me. So I'll be able to fill you in with a lot of great stuff. And I've only told you a tiny fraction of the things that I did at Walt Disney World and Universal. As much as we've had two podcasts, I still have only scratched the surface. So as time goes on, we'll be able to recall some other things. And life will change and the world will change and we'll change with them in the most magical way we can. Yeah.
And it really is a 500-page book, or almost a 500-page book, so there's a lot more stories in there.
But my whole story is not even in the book. That was just one version of what happened. There's things that we could really get into and talk about. So come up with other questions and come up with other things you'd like to know about, and if I can answer them, I will. Steve, that idea about the tombstone, that is amazing. I would be so honored if that would ever happen.
My final question is going to be for Catherine.
Of course it is.
Not right now. No, all right, go ahead, Sheila. I'm gonna save that.
You want it to be the final final comment?
Yeah.
You want me to close out kind of the show?
Well, are we doing the?
No, that's what I'm saying.
We're not doing it.
We're not doing the questions. Just inside of Timmy. No, I'm saving that for next time.
What?
Okay, good.
Remember, always have something to go back to.
I'm doing this.
Oh, Sheila, you're a genius.
Well,
okay.
You married me.
Big mistake.
Well, geniuses sometimes do.
I was drunk. What can I say?
Oh, my God. It's a great way to close out the show. Question for Catherine?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Because we were talking about the epitaph, Catherine, since you're the author, what would you write for his epitaph at the Haunted Mansion?
Oh, gosh. I would need time to think about that.
Come on.
Here lies the world's oldest five-year-old. I don't know.
That's pretty good. Nothing about my hair. Are you sure?
He has really nice hair, yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Catherine. Save that thought for next time.
We could do it later, yeah.
Yeah, save it for the next episode.
That's kind of
Think about the episode. Yeah,
I will make a note on
guys?
That.
You guys?
Can we tell your listeners where they can get the book?
Yes, and then I will do the closeout to the show.
Oh, okay. Well, it's only available on Amazon. It's Extraordinary Everyday Magic.
Yeah, that's all.
And I've got it right in front of me.
For our listeners, I don't know if there's enough words for me to say, go to Amazon, go buy this book. Yeah. You will enjoy every page. It was a book that I really could not put down once I started. Yeah. Also, for our listeners, next month, our giveaway, we are buying one of Timmy's books for a giveaway. So what we would like you to do is just go over to our Facebook group. When we put the post up, answer the question or, you know, leave a comment, whatever we're asking you to do. It might be a funny photo, whatever. This will be a giveaway for next month.
I'll tell you what, I'll have Catherine mail you a signed plate that they can put on. So we can
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful.
Right.
And that way we get the book is also signed by Catherine and myself, if that would help. I'd love to be able to.
Well, I mean, Timmy is all about sharing the magic, and Monorail Tales also want to share a little bit of that magic by this book.
That's
so
amazing. Thank you so much for doing that. That is really huge. Yeah. And I'm really, really grateful, man. Thank you so much. I can't tell you. You guys got to tell me what you want a picture of, either something from, say, Ratatouille or something from Frozen or whatever, or a character.
Monorail.
Monorail.
Monorail. Okay, you got it then. That's what I'll do.
With Mickey waving.
Oh, that's great. Okay, that's what we'll do.
No, monorail would mean so much to us. It really would.
I figured that, but I wanted to ask in case, you know, maybe you're in love with Cinderella or Pocahontas, and you said, oh, I'd like the monorail, but I really like this character, or Tigger, or Tinkerbell. But if the monorail is a great idea. I'll start researching some great photos of it, and then I'll make you a nice painting, and we'll send it off to you.
Well, Monorail Tales has been part of our life for over 4 years now. So okay. I think it would be very fitting to have something like that on our wall, to be quite honest. Timmy, Catherine, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show tonight. I'm already looking forward and starting those questions for the next episode.
I can't believe it's over already.
I know. I hate this.
It's never over. Never over.
It is never over. You're right. The magic just grows.
Another chapter.
That's exactly right. Oh, Steve, you're a good guy. Thanks for saying
that. Yeah, I mean, you have your book with chapters. We have our podcast with chapters. Absolutely. There you go.
Yeah, we do.
And your listeners, thank you. Keep dreaming big and don't ever give up on your dreams, because I'm living proof that they can come true. If you just don't give up, you stay focused on the prize. Don't let things stop you. Have a lot of magic in your heart, and just like I said, dream big, and it can come true. It really can. Like Walt said, we can achieve our dreams if we only have the courage to pursue them. And I did, and it worked. He was right. And so I just like to have your listeners, no matter what you do, even if it's not art, you might be a candle maker, you might be a nurse, you might be, you know, somebody that unclogs drains. But whatever your dream is, please don't give up and just keep going. I promise it'll work out for you.
And on that amazing word from Timmy Britt to our listeners, we love you and look forward to chatting again. So, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Switch on the sky and the stars glow for you. Go see the world, cause it's all so brand new. Don't close your eyes, cause your future's ready to shine. It's just a matter of time before we learn how to fly. Welcome to the rhythm of the night. There's something in the air you can't deny. It's been fun, but now I've got
Thank you!